Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone, on Monday, October 3rd. Happy October, everyone. I hope you like fall because it's really here now, right? The stores are featuring Halloween stuff. The fall produce is in. The summer fruits and vegetables are fading out. The heat went on in my building for the first time this season last night, and we needed it. That autumn chill was in the air and in my bedroom. And if it's October, election season is upon us too. 5 weeks and a day until Election Day in November. Early voting begins about 10 days before that, depending on where you are, and absentee ballots go out in the mail even before that. So happy October, happy fall season, happy election season for real this month. And so trying to be a pro-democracy public radio station and not just a horse race politics as sports coverage outlet, you know, we continue our midterm election series, 30 issues in 30 days on this show, where we promise you 30 actual issues on 30 consecutive shows before the election, not just the horse race and not just personal attacks that are also intended to distract voters from the real issues that affect our lives, the personal attacks that sound like issues but are really distractions. So we began the series last week, if you missed it, with three parts on abortion rights as an issue in these elections, followed by two parts on immigration. This week, we'll also focus on two different topics, climate as an issue and the culture wars in education. And we'll start there right now. Republicans nationwide are running on an education theme of what they call parental rights. You've heard about this probably. It's mostly an attack against teaching things that are negative in American history and an attack on teaching anything positive about LGBTQ Americans. You'll remember that Florida recently passed its so-called Don't Say Gay law for their public schools and that the Virginia governor's race last year, and this is a big reason why it's gone national in many campaigns, the Virginia governor's race last year resulted in a win by Republican Glenn Youngkin, partly because of his campaign for what he called parental rights, focused mostly on banning certain kinds of teaching about racism, mislabeled critical race theory. New Jersey is no exception to parental rights as an issue, including in the state's most closely contested congressional race, in which Democrat Tom Malinowski is vying for re-election against Republican Tom Kane Jr. in the 7th congressional district, a swing district, and for those of you not familiar with the Jersey map, a little south and west of New York City, including places like Summit and Westfield, closest to the city, and then out Route 78 to the Pennsylvania line. An article on NJ.com just yesterday was called NJ's New Sex Ed Standards Hit the Classroom as Criticism Rages in Some Districts. Now, as elsewhere in the country, the Republican candidate's focus on parental involvement in education is largely on the issue of gender or sexuality inclusivity framed as age inappropriate and even smeared as pornography, as you will hear in this clip. This is Tom Kane Jr. on Fox in August talking about the state's new sex ed standards. This clip begins with a Fox News host, Bill Hemmer.
But the upgraded standards now for second graders is for teachers to talk about the range of ways people express their gender and how gender role stereotypes may limit behavior. What would a second grader, what would a second grader understand about that? Help me out.
Well, they wouldn't be able to understand that, which is why parents across New Jersey, Republicans and Democrats alike, stood up against these standards. Parents have shown us, and every study is that the more the parents are involved in the kids' education, focused on core education curricula and those priorities, and mutual respect in our classroom is what allows these kids to succeed. And having a curricula that includes gender identity and sexual education and exposure to pornography on issues as young as second grade in any school district is wrong.
Republican congressional candidate in New Jersey's 7th Congressional District, Tom Kane Jr. on Fox in August. Here's a response to that exchange from the Democratic incumbent Tom Malinowski on the WNYC show, The People's Guide to Power, with Bridget Bergen last Sunday.
My opponent, who you mentioned, Tom Kaine Jr., has jumped on this bandwagon of bringing the culture wars to New Jersey. He went on Fox News a few months ago and accused elementary school teachers in his hometown, actually, of Westfield, New Jersey, of teaching pornography to second graders. It's obviously not true. It's nothing to do with the state education, sex education guidelines. And, you know, just think about what a horrible thing that is to falsely accuse an elementary school teacher of. But I think the political purpose of this is just to stoke fear and anger and then to try to use it to win elections. I mean, if I'm a parent and I hear a politician tell me that teachers are sexually grooming my second grade teacher, I'm going to be pretty upset about that and pretty concerned, right? And it just happens to be not true. And that's what has really upset me. We need to be recruiting more teachers to teach our kids. That's a big, big problem right now. We have a teacher shortage in New Jersey and all across the country. And, you know, recruiting teachers into a situation where politicians are going to accuse them of horrific things like that is even harder.
And Malinowski tried to reframe the conversation about parents to say what he thinks parents are really most concerned about when it comes to the public schools.
I think parents should have input on every aspect of their kids' educations. And ever since I've been in this office since 2018, I've been talking to parents, to teachers, to students. I do assemblies and meetings at high schools all the time. And I get a range of concerns from folks about our schools. The number one concern, probably going back to when I first started running for office, was safety. I meet a lot more parents who want to protect their kids from guns than parents who want to protect their kids from books.
Tom Malinowski on The People's Guide to Power here last Sunday. So you get the idea. Let's talk about it. Issue 6 in 30 issues in 30 days. Now, I want to thank WNYC's Nancy Solomon for filling in for me on Friday when they did Issue 5, Asylum and the Border. And Nancy is right back as our leadoff guest for this week right now. As many of you know, she covers New Jersey. So hi, Nancy. Thanks for putting your reporter's hat back on and coming right back on the show.
Thanks, Brian. I'm happy to do it.
First, can you explain the news hook event here, the implementation of new sex ed standards, or what was called in one of the clips, upgraded standards for New Jersey schools?
Yeah, they've just gone into effect. So they've been discussed for the past year or so, but they've, you know, with the new school year, they've just gone into effect. And of course, there just seems to be a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding about what these are. You know, I understand that when parents think that their, you know, kindergartner or second grader is going to be taught the birds and the bees, or, you know, in very specific ways, or if they think, for instance, one of the during the gubernatorial race in 2021, there was this story floating around of that a parent told the Republican candidate Jack Cittarelli that her, you know, I can't remember what grade it was, but her youngster came home and said that he learned today that he could be a girl instead of a boy, or it was something like that. I might have the actual details wrong, but so this has inflamed people. When I read these standards, there's certainly, you know, to call it pornography is crazy, but it's really, you know, like, let me just read you, Brian. For sex ed, by the end of grade 2, this is what kids are supposed to have learned by the end of grade 2, that mm-hmm. every individual has unique skills and qualities, which can include the activities they enjoy, such as how they may dress, their mannerisms, things they like to do. The second point, families shape the way we think about our bodies, our health, and our behaviors. So, and the rest of it's about family and communication. I mean, you know, this is really being blown out.
Even with that, somebody might say, oh, why should they be talking about their bodies in a teacher-led classroom discussion in second grade?
Yeah, but I mean, don't kids need to learn get healthy messages about their bodies? I mean, I guess, you know, I come from it from the other side. I just don't see the need to shield kids from this kind of information. I don't think we're talking about, you know, sex acts. That's not what's being talked right. about in these young grades. It's, sure. you know, and I'll tell you one interesting personal experience I've had raising kids is that when our youngest son joined the Cub Scouts, there is a whole chapter at the very beginning of the Cub Scout manual that's kind of like the Bible for being a Cub Scout, in which you have to sit down with your kid, with your son, and go over very, very explicit stuff about unwanted sexual advances and teaching them about it, and which is
because
a sad
of the
thing.
History, the yes. history of what Scout leaders and the Boy Scouts have done.
Yes. Now, I was the parent doing that, and that's what parents are saying, is they should be the ones doing this. But it's not like, I mean, kids need to know that their bodies are theirs, and anyone who, you know, it's not right for anyone to touch their body in a way they don't want them to. Yeah. So, I mean, that's, like, we're talking about some basic messaging for kids that is about growing up healthy and safe. And I've spoken with Governor Murphy about this, and that's what he says. He says, you know, this is about giving kids really important information that they need to understand.
You heard the Fox News host Bill Hemmer in his question to Kane in the clip we played referred to second graders being taught according to the standards as he cited them, the range of ways that people express their gender. Now, that was not in that list that you just read. So is that in the standards for second grade, like non-binary gender expression or the concept of being trans or anything like that?
It doesn't drill down to that level of specificity. I think it's set up as a framework of, you know, this is what we want. This is the overarching goal. And teachers are supposed to come up with how to do that. So the language that I found on the state's website is every individual has unique skills and qualities, which can include the activities they enjoy, such as how they may dress, their mannerisms, things they like to do. So we're talking about when, you know, some parents are freaking out about this idea of their kids being taught gender identity. Well, what is that? Must girls wear pink? Is it okay for a girl to like sports and play sports and be good at sports? Are girls good at math and science? Should a girl grow up to be president someday? I mean, you know, that's the level of what we're talking about. I think that's what the state is getting at in terms of like how to talk to very young children about yeah. gender identity.
Right. But from the list of topics you read for the second grade standards, there's not even the word gender in there, never mind a reference to the range of ways that people express their gender as a range. I mean, so the premise of the host's question in that interview seemed to be based on misinformation.
Yeah, I think, I mean, yes. It's Fox News, and I think that's the right. I agree with you there. I will say this. I think there is something to be said about the fact that we are in a moment in which things are changing really fast, and involving gender identity and transgender young people, and I think parents have been, you know, are having trouble with this. They are struggling with it. And, you know, so I don't mean to say that this is being, you know, it is being blown out of proportion, but it's also, it's hitting home because it's going right to the heart of a concern that parents have, right. You know, but the thing is, this is, it's happening, and it's happening whether teachers address it or not. Kids are talking to each other about this. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I have experienced elementary school aged kids, you know, who make a determination that they were born into the wrong gendered body and they want to change their gender. Mm-hmm. All my life, I never saw kids that young,
talking about that.
And I know kids. I know kids of friends of mine who are transgendered, who are very young. And, you know, but the fact is, these kids are, it's not coming from teachers. These kids are absorbing what's happening in the culture. There is a new openness to this idea and this fact, and they are grappling with it, and they're grappling with it with each other. They're talking about it at school without teachers bringing it up.
So listeners, especially if you're the parent of a school-age child in New Jersey, and especially if you're the parent of a second grader in New Jersey, which is where the political controversy seems to be residing mostly around these new sex ed standards as an issue even in the congressional race between Kane and Malinowski, even though that's really a state issue and a local school board's issue. This is being raised as it is by Republicans around the country as a congressional issue. Parents, do you have an opinion or a question about teaching gender or sexuality inclusivity in schools, or at what age? Do you have an opinion or a question about what role parents should play in their child's in-school education in general, since this is being framed as a parents' rights issue? What issues have you gotten involved with as a parent? Do you think this is just a way to weaponize homophobia and transphobia that people have into a voting block, or anything else related, especially if you're a parent, especially if you're a New Jersey parent, especially if you're a New Jersey parent of a second grader? And I see we're getting a call from somebody who teaches sex ed to elementary school kids. So Amanda in Brooklyn, we're going to take your call first here in just a second. So anyone else related, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, with our New Jersey reporter, Nancy Solomon, who also, of course, hosts the monthly program Ask Governor Murphy here on the station. And Amanda in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me. So I am an early childhood sexuality educator. I teach a program called Our Whole Lives. It is a program that was actually developed by the Unitarian Universalist Association. It's one of the most comprehensive sexuality programs in the country. It spans the age range from kindergarten all the way to senior citizen. And I specifically teach the kindergarten and first grade program. And I've been doing this for several years now, and this program has actually been around since the 90s. The main goals of this program are to provide children age-appropriate information about their sexuality on a variety of different topics, with the ultimate goal of helping develop healthy sexual adults and safe senses of sexuality. The specific topics that we teach in kindergarten and first grade, we have 8 different workshops, and the first 2 workshops are just devoted to bodily anatomy, external and internal, and body diversity, understanding that bodies come in many different shapes and sizes, and that all types of body types are celebrated. And then we go on to talk about sexual abuse prevention. And in my opinion, that's the most important reason why it's so necessary to teach children at this age about their sexuality, is because we're trying to fight child abuse.
Go ahead.
Right. Yes. And, we can't do that if we don't provide the information to our children that they need at the time that they need it before those things happen, right?
Let me jump in for time and ask you a follow-up question. Sorry, did you say you teach this in the New York City public schools in kindergarten and first grade?
So I actually teach this at a church. I teach this at First Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Brooklyn. But this program is taught in many secular communities as well, including schools around the city. This program can be used by anybody, any kind of organization. We are trained by the OWL Our Whole Lives Association.
So the difference, I guess, the people on the right who object to this teaching in the public schools would say between what you do and what the issue is in the public square is this is voluntary, associated with your church, that parents can put their kids in or not. That much is fair, right?
Yes, but there are schools that they have come together and they've rallied together. The parents themselves have said rallied together to bring this program into their schools because it is such a valuable program. It provides such needed information, and parents are really actually all the parents that I have talked to are desperate for their children to receive this kind of information.
Amanda, I'm going to leave it there and get some other folks on, but I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate the specificity with which you describe what and how you're teaching to the kindergartners and first graders in your program. Let's go to Kylie in Ridgewood. You're on WNYC. Hi, Kylie.
Hey.
You have a story for us, I see.
Sure. So we moved to Ridgewood from the Upper West Side this month, and the first week that we moved in, our next-door neighbor who's lived in the neighborhood for 50 years knocked on the door and had a printed article that she handed me and said, "Welcome to the neighborhood. Here's a pretty bouquet of flowers, and I wanted you to know that they're going to teach your young school-age kids all about sexual acts." And I was like, "What?" You know? And she gave me an article that is talking about what we're discussing, and she said that her priest, I'm Catholic, she's Catholic, her Catholic priest had told her to go and knock on the doors of parents of young school-age kids and let them know this is happening. So I had to do my own research and saw that it was kind of this political agenda, misinformation campaign. And I talked to her, and, you know, she's older, and there were kind of parts of it that maybe weren't ideal, but you have to let that go. But my point is that I think there's an overlap here that hasn't been discussed. And the last caller was really great to say that within her religious context, there are people who are encouraging this conversation, but there's also this other side of the conversation, which is from a religious agenda.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kylie. And, you know, in the NJ.com article, Nancy, that just ran yesterday, it also was talking about one of the districts, let's see, which district, in Haddonfield. And the second paragraph of the article says, unnamed adults handed out the envelopes labeled concerned about what your children are learning in Haddonfield schools. Look inside. And it was exactly the kind of thing, I guess, that Kylie was just describing. Have you come across this yet?
I have not. I saw that article, and I've you know, these stories have come up. I mean, you know, one of the interesting things is that the statewide teachers union, the New Jersey Education Association, added fuel to the fire, but they came out with a video early in September that showed images of parents screaming at school board meetings and called them extremists. And they were basically, like, it was a shot across the bow to basically say, we're going to fight this. We're going to fight you. You're not going to get us to back down. And we're going to point out that this, how, you know, what are the political roots of this, movement. And, you know, it's unclear to me. I haven't done enough reporting to be able to tell you whether this is grassroots or astroturf. I really, I don't have, I haven't been out there at those school board meetings. I've heard
You want to make that distinction for people?
Yes.
Is it grassroots or is it AstroTurf? Which
right.
means?
So grassroots meaning it sort of bubbles up from just ordinary parents who become active because they're upset and they organize in their communities. Or is this a funded and organized attempt from the top down from some political interests? I mean, AstroTurf is used in lots of different lots of different movements. But the idea that like one of the most famous ones is the Koch brothers, who are super, super wealthy, you know, oil and gas magnates, funding anti-climate change stuff. So it's sort of like, is it top down coming from politicians who want to use it as a wedge issue, or organizations that are anti-gay that are trying to whip up this stuff, fundamentalist organizations, who have their whole shtick about this. So it's hard to know where it's all coming from. But at this point, I think, parents are, it's scary for parents when, they get this information and they don't know what's being, you send your kid off to school, you don't know what's said when those doors close and the teacher's in there with them. So I understand that it's, mm-hmm. that it's scary for parents, but I think there's a lot of manipulation going on.
We're getting a call from Nora in Maplewood who says she helped write the New Jersey sex education standards. So, Nora, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much, Brian. Happy to be with you.
What would you like to add?
Sure. So I am a sexuality educator. I work at Advocates for Youth. I helped write both the national sex education standards as well as had feedback on the New Jersey updated standards, which actually aren't that different from 2014. I think, unfortunately, as Nancy was saying, what we're seeing is a small group of really extremist, really propping up controversy where there is none. The vast majority of parents with school-age kids really support comprehensive sex education, including teaching about gender identity and sexual orientation. So these groups are really just hoping to confuse and scare parents away from what we know is in the best interest of all kids.
Nora, thank you very much. Nancy, you told us before we went on the air that you covered a Kane Malinowski forum last night where a number of issues came up, and this issue did not come up. So do you take that as a sign that Kane has now identified this as a losing issue for him rather than a winning issue for him, kind of based on what Nora, who helped write the standards, just said, that this is really a small minority of parents who are concerned about the sex ed standards the way they've been written for the state?
No, I don't take that from it. I think this was just a very specific kind of thing. It was a forum put on by the Jewish Federation, and they had a very clear format in which each candidate came on consecutively, not together, and answered the same questions. And the questions were very focused on anti-Semitism, Israel, Iran, although abortion did come up and was asked about. But they, Kane wasn't asked about sex ed or parental choice. And so I think that's really the only reason why it didn't come up.
Yeah. Where do you think the Kane Malinowski race fits into how this issue is playing this fall nationally in congressional races? I mean, part of the context here is that this isn't actually a congressional issue. It's for local school boards and the state, right? But it's being brought up in school board elections, too, in some communities around New Jersey. I'm seeing where it, actually lives. But why is it in the congressional race at all here or do you see it in national context?
Totally, because I think it's being used very effectively as a wedge issue, just like every other wedge issue we've ever seen. And so it works. And when something works, candidates running for office are going to use it. And I think the roots of the Tom Kane use of parental choice. And just, as a little fact about this, the only event he had held since the primary, since the like real campaign of the general election campaign began, the only event that he had held where voters could come and meet him and talk to him in something that was scheduled was a parental choice forum. You had to make a donation to go to it, and the press were not allowed, but nonetheless, it was a parental choice forum. And so last night was his first public appearance. But getting back to your question, you know, this has its roots in the, as I mentioned briefly, the race for governor in 2021, when the Republican Jack Cittarelli got a real bump, a real bounce from bringing up this stuff about that your kids are being taught about sex in kindergarten. And
it's one of the reasons you think he came closer
exactly
to defeating Murphy than a lot of people expected last year.
Yes. And so it worked here in New Jersey. And so I think that's what's fueling this, that particular, the New Jersey side of this. But but sure, I mean, the Kane-Malinowski race fits into what's going on nationally in every way. There is nothing going on in that race that does not fit into what we're seeing in terms of national politics. The differences between the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate, the fact that this is a race that will contribute to determining which party has control of Congress come January 2023. It fits into, you know, this has become the wedge issue, right? The right wing has won on abortion, and they are clearly moving into gender. And, you know, I think critical race theory, you mentioned it very briefly. I think, you know, teaching about slavery and race is also, you know, a hot button issue, but certainly, you know, how better to whip people up and get them scared than to talk about, you know, that your kid's going to come home and tell you that they want to change their gender.
Yeah.
Like that is, they've landed on something that is very effective for them. Yeah. And, you know, and there's something like, there's been 290 anti-gay, anti-LGBT bills put through, you know, introduced in state houses in the last 2 years in this country. I mean, this issue is not going away.
Let me take one more parent call before we're out of time. And by the way, listeners, David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker, is standing by to join us live to talk about a few different things coming up as our next guest. So stay tuned for David Remnick. But stay tuned first for Megan in Maplewood. You're on WNYC. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. You're a parent, I see.
I'm a parent of a transgender student here in Maplewood. And our daughter began to question her gender identity in third grade. And there's so many points that Nancy has made already. So I just wanted to touch on them from real life experience. If my daughter had this kind of, I think, sexual education in the classroom, it would have really helped her through her exploration in elementary school. It wasn't, she ended up not identifying and transitioning until seventh grade. So I think this really would have helped her to sort of put a name to it, to figure out how to express herself to us. But it doesn't come from the teachers either, to Nancy's point. Like, culturally, all the kids are aware. We have two younger children. You know, when our daughter started to transition, none of their friends even batted an eye. It was, yep, they're a girl now, and this is their name, and everything's fine, and we just kind of, like, move on, because we're all kids exploring, or they're all kids exploring their identity, and, like, asking these questions and talking to each other. So it's
right.
Not about the teachers are indoctrinating anyone. It's that teachers and the curriculum are supporting what's happening in the society, right? Just like Nancy just mentioned with critical race theory, like the curriculum should be reflective in supporting what's happening in our communities. And I just will say one last thing is we live in Maplewood and we live in New Jersey for our transgender daughter, for her health and her safety. And it is extremely expensive to live here and to live in this state. But we feel like we have to do what's best for her, and that transgender youth all over this country are being attacked by all of these bills that Nancy
right.
just mentioned.
And not every community in New Jersey is as progressive as Maplewood, is the point you're making, right?
Exactly. Yes. But not every state is even as progressive as New Jersey on a whole, right, in terms of policies for her health and job protections. And you know, it does make me sad to see that there's this group being propped up that's attacking family's choice and attacking specific types of youth. And I do hope it's not successful in the place where we at least feel safe as a family. I guess that's all.
And there we go. Megan, thank you so much for that. Thank you for all of that. Nancy, before you go, you mentioned that abortion came up at the Kane-Malinowski Forum last night, and you have a clip of something that was said by Tom Kane Jr., the Republican candidate, that might leave people confused about his position on abortion rights, which is obviously a major issue this year. So we're going to play the clip, and then I'm going to ask you to clarify so people aren't left confused if they've heard that clip in the media or if they were at the forum, what his position is. So here is Tom Kane last night.
I support a woman's right to choose. I have a 20-year career in the legislature reflecting that fact. But I think there are reasonable exceptions that should be rape, incest, life and health of the mother.
So he said he supports a woman's right to choose, but there should be exceptions for rape, incest, life and health of the mother, which is usually what you say if you say you're pro-life, but with those exceptions. So what is his position?
Well, that's the problem. It's completely unclear. And I wasn't the only one confused. The audience was very confused. And after he said that, one man shouted out, "Are you pro-choice or not? Answer the question." And I think the reason people were frustrated and confused is because they could not, that statement made no sense. And he said it twice in his presentation, because he was asked again about it later, but when they took questions from the audience, and then
he put it
the same exact way.
Wow!
And then there were three reporters there, and the three of us chased after him after the event, because one of the problems that we're having covering this campaign is that Tom Kane isn't doing interviews with us, and we're not being alerted to events that we could attend, no exposure to the campaign whatsoever, and no interviews. So so we all went chasing after mm-hmm. him to try to get more from him. And this specifically, Charlie Style from the Bergen Record asked him about it, and he repeated it again. So I think it's impossible to know what was going on, I guess, is what I can say as a fact. He seems to not really be grappling with the ideas and the policy and the information, which is kind of astounding given how long we've been living with the abortion debate. And he seems to be sort of regurgitating a practice sentence that somehow he was ill-prepared for and has got a mistake in it. That's the closest I can come to understanding what happened.
So unresolved is the last word in this segment with WNYC New Jersey reporter and host of Ask Governor Murphy on the station, Nancy Solomon. 30 issues in 30 days, issue 6, parental rights in education as an issue in the Kane-Malinowski race. Nancy, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.